Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Before we get into the interview, I just want to show you a couple of things quickly. And just a note, this interview was recorded on the 19th of September 2021. And in actual fact, it was recorded at my urgent request. So Doom God was very kind to come and take part in this. But it's now months later that I'm only now really getting ready to release it. And it's all got to do with my own personal chaos. So I apologize. But this guy has got a lot of stuff to say in a very straightforward way that we need to hear. We need more of this kind of stuff. Whites need to talk out more. And I'm happy to see that whites everywhere are speaking out, and it needs to increase. But I thought that the experiences of this guy would be of great interest because I met him personally at the Fash Bash. When I was in America in 2019 at the Fash Bash, I met this guy face to face and we had some good chats, and I really liked this guy. I thought to myself, man oh man, here is a very impressive white guy, and I'm so glad he's on our side. And there are lots of impressive whites out there, lots. Stacks of them are sitting in the US Army and the US Air Force, lots of really impressive white men. So I thought I would ask him to give his raw input, and that's what we'll be looking at shortly. But I just want to show you a few quick images that I found while I was preparing this video. You may recall that I've mentioned my dumb uncle who volunteered to fight in World War II and all the stupid lies that were told to the white South Africans as to the benefits of fighting against the Germans. And you will recall that I mentioned that my uncle at a point was up in North Africa and he and a friend were playing a game by putting a tin on their heads and then checking every now and then to see whether a bullet had passed close to them, and if so, who had a bullet get closer to him. And then eventually my uncle's friend went very quiet, and when he turned around he saw that the Germans had shot his head off, which I don't have any problem with the Germans doing that. These guys were fucking idiots to go and fight for the British and the dumb allies to begin with. But here in this photo, you can see an American soldier, a sniper actually, because his sniper's rifle is there on the ground. And what he's done is he's put his helmet and his glasses and stuff on a stick, and he's holding it up so that it peeks through the window, and he's no doubt actually waiting for an enemy sniper to shoot at that. And so he's holding it up. Whether he will be able to tell the direction of the shot, that could be interesting, or maybe he's just playing with the enemy. But the sniper, I suspect he's got a very real reason why he's doing this, this white guy. Very impressive looking white guy, I must say. So glad we got these people on our side. These are our people. The only bummer is they are fighting for Jews. Fighting for Jews and anti-white scum and traitors and so forth, instead of fighting for their race. But anyway, I thought this was a pretty interesting little picture that just lends some credence to the story that I told you. The next thing I thought I'd draw your attention to is an image that I got back in 2011, and it had to do with funding the global war on terror, billions of dollars being spent on it. And what amazes me are the hundreds of billions of dollars. Like, for example, in the original startup by 2004, they'd spent $100 billion, and later on they spent $200 billion. But it gets even crazier, because you'll see later on we're talking about trillions. How come going and killing some terrorists cost such insane amounts of money? And in the interview, you'll hear us discussing wastage. There's a lot of wastage going on. And I also wonder, with Jews and others involved, whether there isn't also some kind of corruption and stealing and just all kinds of crap, where they're just wasting US taxpayer money for these Jewish benefits. I found this image in my archive, and I'm not quite sure. This appears to come from the Jewish press, and I think I can make out that it says February 1991. I think that's February 1991. And I think to the right is the junk Jewish year, which might be something like 5-7 something. But the point is February 1991. I can't say the exact date, whether it's February 21st. But look at this. It says Iraqis have gas chambers for all Jews. Iraqis have gas chambers for all Jews. But that's a lie. That's a lie. There weren't any Jews that were slaughtered in Iraq in the first Gulf War, because this would be the first Gulf War. So Jews must have been printing this crap back in 1991 as part of the lies and the junk to motivate dumb Christians into going and killing for the Jews. So there you have a modern lie, same old crap coming from Jewish sources, same old crap, and this time to motivate Americans to go and kill Saddam Hussein for Israel, wars for Israel. And finally, just a meme from the late great Smoloko, where they said, "It is time for the American public to finally recognize the fact that both the global war on terror and the homeland security paradigms are Jewish constructs advancing international Jewry's geopolitical agenda of global hegemony." And that is true. It's just a case of playing the Americans, wasting America's resources for the benefit of Jews, Israel, Jewish power, Jewish state, just all kinds of crap to use America's power so that it benefits the junk Jewish state or non-state known as Israel. So, here is the interview I did with Doom God. Hi there, Doom God. It's nice to have you here on my show. How are you doing?
Thank you, Jay. And I'm doing all right myself.
Yeah, I remember you specifically because I met you there at the Fash Bash in the US in 2019, and I remember us having some interesting discussions there about future wars and maybe wars in South Africa. And I think you were the only person at the FASH Bash that had been in the military recently. The other people were, I don't think anybody
About the
else were.
military history. Yeah, the military history of South Africa, and I think Rhodesia actually was the primary focus. Was a very detailed conversation, and I think at the time it was like 2 in the morning because we were all having a lot of fun and drinking, and I was completely wrapped up in the conversation, or I should say the presentation. Even though I was dead tired, we were all about to pass out, but I remember staying up just to watch that presentation. So I'm glad to talk to you again. It's been a long time. I'm glad you're doing well.
Yeah, we're all hanging in there. And it's very strange that shortly after our FASH Bash and all those things, now the world is a very different place. I can't believe things have changed so much. And I'm really glad that we did those things that we did in 2019. And after the FASH Bash, I went to Canada where I did the same talk. But I'm really glad that I got a chance to see other whites and talk to them face to face and discuss things like that. But yeah, so Doomguard, I understood from our time there when we just chatted privately that you'd been in Afghanistan. And you're probably the only American I've met face to face who's actually been in Afghanistan and fought in Afghanistan. And when I saw this junk coming up the other day about Afghanistan and all of a sudden the whole thing falls apart, you were one of the first people I thought of. I thought I must email you because the strange thing was that I was just busy posting stuff on my website and I came across a news article about Afghanistan. And to my amazement, I was looking at this thing and saying to myself, but hold on, the Taliban are busy advancing. And the Taliban seem to be aggressively attacking. And I posted it and I began to realize, something's not right here. And about 2 weeks or so after I posted it, this whole thing then just blew up and it came out. And the next thing I know is, America's withdrawing, there's chaos and so forth. But until that news report, like 2 weeks before the whole thing blew up, it had seemed as if all the fighting in Afghanistan, all these years, as if America had Afghanistan pacified, to use a Roman term. And it looked as if things were quite okay, and America had managed to achieve what Russia had not been able to achieve. Of course, there is also the whole issue of how much America's wars cost, which I find absolutely hideously unbelievable, but that's a whole other topic. But I'd like to ask you, can you give me some background on how it was that you ended up in the military? And I assume, am I correct in saying that you signed up and ended up going to Afghanistan and then you left? So how long were you in the military? Because you're not like a person who's been permanently in the military. How was it that you got involved and ended up going to Afghanistan?
Oh, I was only on active duty for 4.5 years, and I don't believe I ever had any intention of serving long term. Actually, I just joined the army for the sake of training, really, if I'm honest, because even at the time I was and thinking about the military when I was in high school, I remember reading about Vietnam in history classes. I think I wrote a paper. It was about a 15 or 20 page paper that was sort of an essay on Vietnam and the failure of the rules of engagement and the failure of command and the lack of political understanding of the situation in America, right? And so basically, I think I briefly outlined some of the things that I had read about the beginning, middle, and the end of the Vietnam War. So I was already well aware of the way that America fights most of its wars, at least after the era of World War II. So my intention in going and joining the military was for training. So that was pretty much like explicitly my goal, well, explicitly to myself and to my family anyways. And yes, I did deploy twice while I was in the Army. I was just a regular infantryman. Well, I had trained as a parachute infantry troop. Like I had learned to parachute.
Nice.
I only did about 11 training parachute jumps. Yes. But obviously I got in way too late to be parachuted into Afghanistan. I think they did one parachute operation in 2003 or maybe it was 2004. I don't really recall now, but it wasn't really in the context of combat. I think they mostly did it as part of like a legacy or like a tradition. That's mainly what it is now. The American military does maintain airborne capable units. It does train them and continuously do training jumps. But to my knowledge, that's the only actual jump in a combat zone, or at least in the theater of combat in the modern age. I think the Ranger Regiment did parachute when they went to sack Manuel Noriega, if I recall correctly. But that was probably the last time that it's been done, and that was during the 80s, I think. In any case, so that was my role, and I deployed to Iraq, to Mosul, Iraq, in 2008. Then I went to a different duty station when I returned here in America. And then I ended up deploying to Afghanistan in 2010. And that was shortly before I was scheduled to get out. That was going to be my end of active duty service. So as soon as I came back from Afghanistan, I just left the military. So,
okay.
Where I was while I was there in Afghanistan, sorry, you were saying?
No, I just want to ask a question or two. So you roughly spent from approximately 2008 to 2012. That was your time period that you were in the U.S. military.
No, it'd be more like, no, it would be more like 2007 to 2011.
Ah, because that is actually quite, that is a time of quite intense fighting still, even then, hey. It was still quite intense then. Or was it already?
Oh, more so in Iraq, in my experience. We did a lot of missions in Iraq, and there was shelling going on. Like there was a lot of IEDs and a lot of artillery, like mortars being shot.
Okay.
And so in the course of my platoon was split up when we deployed to Iraq. So the first platoon went to, I think they might've gone to Baghdad. I can't recall exactly now. We went to Mosul with the second platoon, and soon we were in several engagements, but they were pretty short. And it was after nightfall was when we usually went on missions. So we didn't necessarily always find the people that were shooting at us. I only recall two incidents. The second platoon, they ended up losing three of their men. They were out investigating some shack out in the middle of the desert, and turned out it was rigged with explosives. So they lost three of their guys. And then afterwards, they went back and destroyed the shack. I don't know that there was much purpose in doing that. I think probably there was no enemy presence at that point, but they did it just for morale purposes, maybe. So they wasted some bombs and some ammunition on that. But we did lose some I know any of them personally, but three of them did end up dying on that deployment in Iraq. No one from my platoon was lost. And so we did basically missions every night. We did routine missions. We'd go out and look for, we'd patrol or look for persons of interest and detain them. And so that went on pretty much the whole deployment. I'm trying to think of something else of interest to mention
Yeah,
about Iraq. I think it's
just a question for you. Did you end up in situations where they were shooting at you, where you were having in skirmishes and stuff like that?
right. That only happened twice for my platoon. They're both on night missions, and then there was one case where we were out in the city of Mosul, and I think maybe a block away there was another convoy, not related to us, on their own mission, and they were a totally different unit, but they hit an IED, so they blew up right next to us. But we weren't harmed. I mean, while I was there during the daytime, we'd usually be asleep, and so sometimes I'd wake up and there's this huge explosion in the distance, and they're like, "Yeah, we got shelled. Like somebody just launched a mortar round over the barricades." So that happened sometimes. As far as actual shooting, there was one case where we were shot at by an Iraqi police officer, and it was, I think, the first squad of my platoon that eventually counterattacked and killed him. But we know exactly what happened there. I think what they suggested was maybe he was just confused as to who we are, who we were,
Okay.
because it was pitch black that night. We
Okay.
could see, I mean, you can kind of vaguely see with the night vision goggles that we have, but they didn't have equipment like that. So we don't really know exactly what happened, if he was just sympathetic to Al-Qaeda, or if he just didn't like Americans, or if he was just like confused, didn't know what the hell was going on. You know, I mean, I would think it would be pretty easy to tell who the Americans are. We've got these big armored vehicles, you know. We've got
Yes.
very particular equipment. American soldiers, you can usually tell just by the outline of their equipment, you know, that they've got the certain kind of helmet, certain kind of optical equipment attached to their weapons or to their helmet.
Absolutely.
So I think probably he might have just been sympathetic to like some anti-American forces or something. Maybe Al-Qaeda, or maybe not even that. It could have just been that there were certain people in the country that were really annoyed with us, because that's what I'd heard, is the American soldiers did not treat the natives very well during the previous years of the occupation before I was deployed there. So Iraq is kind of just really hot, dusty, sandy. Smells really horrible. The air is polluted, and the city's kind of run down. Definitely third world place. And the people, I mean, I don't know, they kind of look like Mexicans, but like a Semitic version of Mexicans, and they smell really bad. Like we had one of them sitting in the Striker we were driving right next to me. The stench was abominable. I just absolutely horrible. So Iraqis, I don't really know what to say of
If
them as a race or as a group of people, like as a political or a cultural identity. I think that Saddam Hussein was trying to create a modern or semi-modern nation out of Iraq. And so he was assembling maybe two or three ethnic groups of people together into a nation. And the ones that couldn't be assembled, like the Kurds or whoever, he wanted to get them out of the country so that they wouldn't be a fifth column. But he obviously never had the chance to complete that nationalization program. Probably it would be better to reserve it for a different conversation if we wanted to talk about why. I know a little bit about Saddam Hussein. I don't know a lot. I know a little bit about him. Apparently, he was like a novelist and a poet in his free
Oh
time.
wow.
Character,
Oh wow.
interesting man. But but I would have to learn a lot more about him. As for Afghanistan, when I deployed there, it was in 2010, and it was a remote place, like a very remote little COP is what they call it, or a little FOB, forward operations base. But it was really small. Like the whole thing was probably like an eighth of a mile. It was like probably a few hundred meters. Well, not even meters. Probably like 100 meters from one wall to the other. And it was square shaped. And this was about 3 hour drive, about a 3 hours drive northwest of Mazar-e Sharif. So when I first arrived at Kabul's was at that time, and I think throughout the entire occupation, was the main military airstrip, like the main military landing zone. And we landed there, spent like a couple weeks in orientation and getting our equipment sorted and deciding, because at that time we also broke up our unit. We broke up even into squad size units to be sent throughout the country. So we really were just kind of like, yeah, we were just kind of pimped out, scattered all across Afghanistan as a company. Actually, as a whole battalion, they just split the whole battalion up. And so we had like maybe a little bit more than a squad, and we were performing guard duty. Like we were basically guarding for other people that were operating there too. So then we took a helicopter ride to Mazar-e Sharif, as I recall. Then we, at Mazar-e Sharif, took MRAPs, which is it's like a heavy armored personnel carrier. Yeah. I don't mean heavy in like the military sense, but I mean it's, as for a light vehicle, it's taller and heavier than like a standard Humvee.
Okay.
So we took those on another 3 or 4 hour drive until we got to our destination, which was a tiny little village in the mountains there. I saw like the biggest mountains I've ever seen in my life. Well, I guess Mount Rainier was probably bigger, but I only saw that. I only ever saw that from like, but these, we were down in this valley right underneath these mountains, and they reached all the way up above the clouds, all the way up into the sky. Like basically on any given day, they're up there hidden behind the clouds. So
it's a nasty, it's a nasty piece of terrain.
Yeah, definitely. If we had to do any, like, if we were doing any patrols up there, it would have been hard. Probably impossible, actually. But fortunately, we rarely went on patrol. When we did, we basically went around the local valley farms there, the valley there, and talked to some of the tribal leaders. Or I guess I should say the people in charge talked to them. I didn't really. So the first day that we were there, as we were leaving Mazar-e Sharif, I recall that one of the NCOs that was there on the little base where we'd be staying, he was sitting in the passenger seat beside me, and we were driving in a convoy, and we'd stopped in a village that was on the way there. The roads were terrible, by the way. Like the whole time I was on edge, like the whole time I had my teeth gritted. Like I was white knuckle grabbing the steering wheel, because Afghan traffic is just total chaos. I mean, the roads are all shit to begin with. Like the roads are, I don't know who built them. Maybe there was, I think during like the 40s and 50s, there was some small scale development going on, some small scale modernization projects going on, but maybe they were also built under the Soviets too, during the Soviet occupation, but they'd all fallen into severe disrepair by that point. So the roads were really bad. And at most, you get like a kind of a narrow 2-lane highway. If you're going, if you're traveling long distance anywhere in the country, you're on like a 2-lane, really bad highway.
Is the road tarred, or is it just gravel, or what is it?
They had some asphalt roads there. Had some tarred roads. I think maybe in one of the towns there were common roads, but for the most part, in any of the villages, it's all just gravel roads, of course. And most of the roads in the towns are also gravel roads, but the highway itself, that was a tarred road, if I recall correctly, because we were able to actually drive like 50, 60 miles an hour on it. There are no speed limits, basically. You know, you do have semis on these roads, so they weren't all gravel roads, but yeah, the semi trucks are flying around as fast as they want to. Like they're flying around as fast as they can go. Everybody else is just flying around as fast as they can go. They'll pass you or try to pass you when there's pretty obviously oncoming traffic and they're about to get killed. Like they just kind of have a general disregard. I don't know if they're just kind of neurotic, maybe because they're so race mixed and degenerated by this point that they, I don't know, that they just have trouble gauging like distances and like making a safe, like evaluating a situation and correctly evaluating the risks, or I don't know what the hell their problem is. They just have poor coordination. I have no idea.
Are there
I mean,
lots
some of
of
them are Asian. That's the other problem about Afghan is you have some Asian drivers because that's what the Hazara Afghans are, is basically like Mongolians or some kind of Chinese Mongoloid race. And they live in Afghanistan and they're one of the most hated ethnic groups by the other ethnic groups, I mean. So we made it there in one piece, but as we were driving through one of the villages, we had stopped for some reason. Then the rest of the convoy took off. And so I was about to take off behind him, and this Afghan lady or Afghan woman, she walks right in front of my on the brakes, and like probably we were like 6 inches from hitting her. Like by the time the truck stopped, we were like inches of just running her right over. But it's like she just kept walking like nothing even happened. It was the weirdest thing. She just suddenly decided to walk out right in front of us. And even though I obviously almost flattened her, she just kept walking as if really nothing had happened. So
She didn't.
immediately
She,
after I
she.
stopped the vehicle and she walked, yeah.
So she didn't even care that you'd almost killed
No,
her.
she didn't react at all.
That's
No, I think
interesting.
she did it on purpose. I think she did it on purpose. That's what the NCO that was, I think he was like a goddamn staff sergeant or E7. Anyways, that guy was a real piece of work, but he just looked over at me with this intensely irritated face. Like he was just so utterly annoyed. Like he was furious, and he just asked me, "Why'd you stop?" Like he just said it in the most
Oh
he
wow. You
said
mean
it in such a deadpan voice. He's just like, yeah,
he
he just looked at me with stink eye, with a grimace on his face. Why did you stop? And I, at the time, I was a young kid, so I responded, well, because of the lady that just walked in front of me. He's like, who cares? Probably she's blind or deaf, and she probably her uterus, she got uterine cancer, and she can't have kids anymore, so no man wants her. So you would have been doing her a favor to run her over. Like this is something he said to me. Like he didn't hesitate at all. Like that, snap, snap. He's like, just run her ass over. So
Let me
that's
ask
the
you.
quality of the guys we were dealing with there. Like that's the class of the leadership we had. But anyways, you're saying?
Me ask you a question. Was this a white guy? Are all the guys with you white guys?
Well, no. I mean, all the guys, I think there was one, I think we had one black NCO with useless. He wasn't an infantryman, communications technicians. By our radios rarely worked. But anyways, no, the guys that were actually operating there on the base that we were guarding, I'm not going to say, you know, who they are or what they were, but no, he might have been
Just
Jewish.
race,
I mean, he
just
looked
race.
like a white guy. Sorry.
I'm just interested in race. Okay, and you say
Right,
this guy
right.
even
Well,
looked Jewish.
this particular guy, he kind of might have been white, but he might also have been Jewish. I'm not sure.
Wow.
But he might have been, he looked, I never saw or heard anything that he would, like, he didn't say he was Jewish. He seemed to just be a white guy, but kind of like, maybe he was just from the East Coast and just had an attitude problem, or maybe because he was like a career soldier being in the modern American army. That's just the way he was. I mean, it was pretty fucking based, I guess I have to admit. Like, if they were that based when it comes to dealing with the Mexicans that are invading the country or the wild niggers that are burning our cities down, like, if they could just say, why'd you stop? Like, if they told me to just run their asses over, then we would still have at least this country right now. Like, we'd still have some shred of our country left if these guys were actually that tough. But really, I guess the reason why is because there's no consequences for anything you do in Afghanistan, you know? I mean, there's no consequences for anything you do in Afghanistan. You can do anything you want. Like, you
really?
It's no one cares. I mean, basically, yes. Because
talk to me.
Got out there to the fucking, when we got out there to the FOB out there in the middle of this fucking valley, which I don't know if I should tell you the name of it or not. It's not really relevant, though. But when we got out there, like, all the rumors you've heard about Afghan men are true. They're all a bunch of drug addicts and they're all a bunch of boy buggerers.
Tell me, yeah, bring it all out, because you see,
there's no polite. I'm sorry, but there's just no polite way to put it.
Because yeah. You know, it's almost like you've come to Africa. You're far away from the United States and the rules that the liberals and Jews have been teaching you. It's not that way out in the rest of the world. you agree?
Yeah, no, it is really not.
The world is is not America. It's not America. And the rules are not the same as all the bullshit that you hear in America. Sorry for my interruption.
Oh, absolutely. No, the American mentality, like this concept of the American moral psyche or whatever, however you could refer to this confused ideology of American norms and like impressions of things and ideas of how things should be,
yeah,
is absolutely a delusion. It's just it's absolute delusion. There's just nothing but people are just so deluded to think that this exists anywhere outside of America and maybe like a few countries where white used to live. A few countries where white, there's still some white people living, I guess, but no. No, absolutely. Absolutely not. The driving myth or the driving mythos of America, of the American psyche and like American moral sensibilities, or if you could, I guess it's a bastardization of the word, but whatever Americans think is accepted is just alien to the rest of the world.
It's wonderful to hear.
Oh
yeah. Cause that's Africa. That's Africa is that through and through. So fascinating to see that you head off to the Middle East and to Afghanistan and you see that the whole world is different to America. All that liberal crap that they're trying to make you abide by. It's fucking impossible. Nobody else on the planet gives a fuck about it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could get punished. There could be consequences for some things you do there. For instance, I think like a couple of years ago, there was some, I think he was a staff sergeant or whatever the hell he was. He got mad because he was forced to work with these Afghans and he knew that they were raping boys. He knew that they were taking boys and molesting them. And he got mad about it. So I think he beat one of them up. I don't think he even killed them. He just beat the shit out of him. This was one of the partners that they had in the local area, you know, one of our partners that we're working with on this project, whatever it is. And I think he might have gotten court-martialed and maybe gone to prison. I don't recall his name, but you could look it up. I mean, it'd be easy enough to just Google it, you know, this American soldier who beat an Afghan for pedophilia. So you can't harm them, you know. They're all a bunch of sodomites. Like, they were hitting our guys. Like, they wanted to have sex with our guys.
Wow.
I think one of them asked me whatever language, whatever word that he has for that. And I
kid me.
Ignored them. But I definitely, I definitely, yeah, the thing is, like, they try to act like they have some kind of manners or they're polite because they want to invite you to go have dinner with them, but I would never do it, obviously, because you know the way they are. I'm like, yeah, I ain't going into their fucking tent. I ain't gonna, no, I'm not gonna have dinner with them or do anything with them or shit anyway. So,
My
yeah, we pretty much
goodness.
hated them all right off the bat. And we were supposed to be working with them, I guess, but the guys that were actually running the show there, they had a totally cynical view of everything, just like that NCO that told me, just run her ass over. He's like, no, it doesn't just run over. Don't stop. We're in a convoy here. We're doing a mission. We're trying to get from point A to point B. You don't stop for women or children walking in the way or whatever. So, yeah, the animal cruelty, the child abuse, the general violence, and like drop of the hat, killing somebody over some kind of tribal dispute or because somebody you perceived a slight or disrespect. That's basically the way they are. That's Afghan culture. And so I guess we should all feel real. We should really be overjoyed. We should be thrilled to know that there's going to be hundreds of thousands of them brought to America and Europe in probably a fairly short time frame.
Oof, that.
At least that's what I heard the plan was. I mean, all these communist faggots, they are on the same wavelength. Like they all are sharing the same Borg brain or hive mind, apparently, because they all think exactly alike. And so if Alexandria Ocelot Cortez, Cortana, whatever her name
Yeah.
is, if she can say we need to bring a quarter of a million of America as refugees, then I'm guessing that Jen Psaki and Joe Biden are thinking the same thing. I mean, I'm
Yes,
guessing because
yes.
they all share a common, yeah. So
I
anyway.
so 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 from so let me just fire a few general questions at you, just from what you've told me now. How would you compare the Iraqis versus the Afghans? If you look at them as people and as a group, are they similar? Are they different? If so, in what way? Just some vague comments there.
They're mostly similar from what I can tell. Yeah, they're mostly similar. They're basically all into, I mean, I guess they're not supposed to drink alcohol technically. I think some of them still do it anyways, but they're all doing drugs, pretty hard drugs. Like they're all using pretty hard drugs. I think they make some kind of opium that you can, or they have some kind of a dip or a chew that they packed it into, and they just have that. They have like a whole cheek full of that in at any given time, or they have their lower lip full of it. So, narcotics use is insane. In Iraq, I also recall we drove down the street once during the early morning or middle of the day. It was one of the few times that we were out for basically almost 2 days screwing around on this mission.
Yeah.
So, when we were driving through town in Mosul, during the middle of the day, I recall a bunch of Iraqi boys were hanging out and hugging and fun. I think they're all a bunch of boy lovers too. They look similar. I mean, they might have a little bit of different racial morphology, but it would be difficult to tell because they're such a hodgepodge at this point. I don't really know that you can. I mean, they're basically just generic brown Semitic people, as far as I can tell. I've heard rumors that allegedly there's white people who live in Afghanistan, but I didn't see any of them. So I don't know where people have found this. It must be found these people that are descended from whatever Scythian Aryan tribes were in the
Oh, okay,
area
yes.
thousands of years ago, or from Greeks maybe that moved there. But that's such a long time ago, though, and those people are so obscure. I feel like that mentioned, for the most part, they're weird Luccatic Mexicans. That's how I would describe
Okay.
them, Semitic Mexicans.
Nice. Okay, so
So, yeah.
another couple of questions for you. Now, from a military perspective, when you went there, what were the orders that you guys were given? You have admitted that you wanted to join the military mainly for the experience and the training. So you're not too concerned about the actual mission. But if you describe your fellow soldiers and your officers and so forth, what were they kind of telling you, and how was the morale, and did anybody believe that they were making a difference? And And what were they telling you about dealing with the locals? Were they giving you hearts and minds story about winning them over and don't treat them badly? Just some general comments on that.
You mean Afghanistan or full military experience, like Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yeah, just fire away. Tell me sort
Okay.
of overall conclusions and thoughts that come to you.
Well, when I first joined after training, I went to infantry training and then parachute training. So the first unit I went to was actually a pretty hardcore unit. Like a fairly hardcore unit. And they were proud of it. Like they were well aware of it and proud of the fact. And so they attracted some, probably some recruits that the army has to offer. There were still a lot of guys that were just kind of regular, just kind of normal. At least they looked pretty externally. But some of the diehards that had been there in the unit for going rear or whatever. Some of those guys, I don't know, maybe they were using steroids, but they were pretty buff. Like they were pretty tough guys. I will give them that. At least tough in terms of like, going to the gym and pumping iron. I don't know how well they would have done if they had to do some serious hard fucking cardio, but there were some of them there that were cardio freaks, and there were some of them there that were just like gym bums. And so some of those guys, I mean, as far as like modern militaries are concerned, they're probably about the best you're gonna. Well, they're pretty high, and they were all very proud of it, and they were all basically egomaniacs.
Okay.
So as far as a sense of having like a greater mission, I mean, maybe it was kind of like on the periphery, but in general, I think that the attitude towards the mission in the Middle East is basically cynical on the part of almost everyone because I think we all kind of, even though we're not really be a racist openly in the military, like the military was one of the first American institutions to become diversified. So it's got that problem, but still the infantry is probably, I would say, even the point I was in or the point I was about to leave, it was like 80% white. And the rest was mostly Mexicans, but black guys don't do
Nice.
very well in the infantry, generally speaking.
Tell
I
me
mean,
why.
there are always a few because they just, it's the same reason they don't do well at anything else that is involved. And so, like, the reason why just recently at my job, they hired some buck nigger. Sorry, no polite way to put it. This guy thought he was a Kang because he did steroids and had a little bit of weight around. But he was like my size or bigger than me, I guess. He was a little bit bigger than me, but he was almost 50 years old and had been doing steroids, obviously, like taking racehorse pills just to try and build up this delusion that he's like a important person that we should be scared of. But he was always having a fucking attitude problem with everybody at work. Like he even did that to me once. Like I asked him to not knock over the shit that I was working on because I'm like, look, I do tests on this later. Like this has got to make strength. This is not something you can fuck around with. Can you just respect my workplace? I said that to him without even cussing at him. Like I wasn't cussing at him or chewing him out. I just asked him to be careful. Actually, I asked him if he had gone over there and knocked it over, and he told me that one of the other kids working there was with them when they did it. And so I said, okay, I'll go talk to him instead. So I didn't even really get that far with him. But just because I brought it up and walked away from him, he came down and started chewing me. And he got in this aggressive posture with me while I'm holding a brick in my hand. And I'm just looking at him like, okay, is it time for me to knock you in the head with this? Like, what do I have to do to you? So he eventually caught on to the fact and he's like, I don't feel like you're listening to me from the way that you're looking at me right now. And I'm thinking, oh, you mean I'm the same way that you're looking at me? Like I'm about to maul you like a pit bull. So that's just the way they are. Like even, he was fishing for an apology from me and I wasn't going to give it to him. I was thinking
Nice.
seriously about just smacking him in the head because I was thinking he's going to get aggressive and I'm not going to be one of these white guys who just gets mauled at work because they're totally oblivious. It's the way most fucking white people in America are. They're fucking oblivious. That's why they're always getting mauled because they just are not paying attention or they're doing something stupid or obviously not B. So he did this repeatedly. Like, he was always having these little, like, close misses with other employees. So we repeatedly told the manager this. Like, I told him personally twice. I was like, you can let him go if you want, because it would be a mistake to hire him on permanently, because he's just got an attitude problem, and I can tell it's gonna be bad. So after he did this to like four or five people, then finally he actually threatened someone. Like, he's like, let's go outside and settle this and let's fight. And so then the manager actually witnessed this, heard him say it. And so he finally saw the fucking light, and he's like, okay, we're going to let him go. But this was after they'd already hired him on. He was still on his probation period. So they finally let him go. And then he came in the next day and he threatened the manager. He physically threatened the manager, and he said, after the manager told him to leave, he's like, you know what? I have rights. So I'm going to go talk to a lawyer. So this is the way these uppity niggers think, you know? And it's the same. That's the way all of them are. That's the way that they interact with cops. That's the way they interact with their coworkers. That's the way they interact when they're in the military with other people, obviously. So that's why they don't do very well in the infantry, because the infantry is, you know, obviously that's the people that are, they have the least protection, and they have to do the most dangerous work.
Or at least yes.
Generally,
yes.
That's the way it was. And they probably have the least patience for nigger behavior. Like, I know I do at that point. At that point, I was still a kid. Like, I was a fucking teenage kid when I was in the military starting off. But after having a Puerto Rican NCO treat me like shit for like 2 years, and then after dealing with various other people in the military, like, I eventually started to develop like a really short temper. And like, I got to the point where I could see a really acute sense of when somebody's getting an attitude and they're like trying to blame me for something, or trying to turn my benevolence or generosity back on me, like turn it into, it's like really weird. Astounding the mental tricks, like mental, yeah. Like, even if you try being nice to niggers, they'll try using that against you. Like, they'll try fucking with you over that. They're just so arrogant, so insolent, just have such an insane ego. It's beyond anything I've seen from anybody else.
Well,
so that's the way it is. You can't tell them anything. You can't train them. They, despite this idea that they have some athletic ability or athletic prowess, they actually seem to not be very good at certain tasks, like like accurately firing a weapon. Anyways, you were saying
that is very interesting. In Africa, we've noticed that stuff as well. The whole hand-eye coordination and. You know, the white man's spatial ability to do, let's call it spatial evaluation, is a thing that puts him in a category of his own, and especially with the blacks, mm-hmm. They're not very good at that. And I was even talking to some people about the Middle Easterners and so forth, and they're also not that hot, but the blacks are particularly inept, and I did kind of get the impression that virtually all the special forces in the US Army even now is still white. The when it comes to having to do the nasty, hard, dirty, truly dangerous stuff, you're going to find white guys there. White guys are the majority. Am I right?
If you're saying elite units in general, then yes, I would say that's correct. But if you're talking about special forces as in terms of like people that are actually called special forces by the American Army, like, special forces has changed. Like, the ones that I've seen are the ones that I didn't join them or spend much time with them, obviously. But the ones that I saw, actually a good number of them, they look like either Mexicans or Middle Easterners or Jews. And I think the reason why is because special forces, they're kind of in charge of subversion, to be honest. Like, their role is to subvert. Like, their role is to go into a country and like either train operatives for whatever purpose they're going to use them for in that country, or to disseminate propaganda, or to try and blend in. Yeah, I don't know. Like, with the guys that were operating at that base I was at, you know, their leader looked like a white guy. He kind of acted like a Jew, or like maybe just an egomaniac. But there were a couple of them that were kind of racial anomalies. They looked like they might have been some kind of Sephardic Jews or Mexicans or who the hell knows, Arabic guys. But the point is, the infantry is still mostly white guys. And I would say if you're talking about like the SEALs or Rangers, yeah, those are mostly white guys. And so that's why I say in terms of the sense of having a mission to go and modernize the brown people, I mean, they're not allowed. I feel like they're all just kind of intuitively skeptical of the idea. Like they just are cynical towards the idea because, you know, I mean, I don't know if I would describe them as being very like, they're not very Christian in their behavior or their attitude. But, you know, they're kind of like the alt-right. They cleave to Christianity as if it's supposed to be some kind of a binding agent that is going to keep their world together as it is. But it still permits them to be these really insane narcissists and egomaniacs while they're at it. That's kind of the way that a lot of these like special units in the military, the American military are, and a lot of the infantry is that way, you know? And I'm not necessarily saying it's a bad thing that you should try to make a name for yourself to perform well or out or compete to try and win status or honor, you know, obviously you should. I mean, that's what, I mean, all of life is based on that. And if man, you've got to work or you've got to fight to gain anything. If you want to have anything, that's what you have to do.
Yes.
So that's fine and all, but in their case, I would say that they just don't have much intelligence or much self-awareness about it, and that's what really ruins it all. But secondly, it's just that they view the Muslims as like an oppositional, like a civilizationally diametrically opposed ideal or diametrically opposed worldview, I guess.
Okay.
So there's some of that, but then also I think they just don't like they probably just are naturally xenophobic, even though we're not supposed to be that way in America. I mean, it's just kind of the way that people naturally are, especially the more warlike individuals are going to be the ones who have a stronger sense of themselves versus the other. And the other is going to be the foreigner or person who adheres to a different ideology. So I don't think they really believed that we were going to change Iraq and Afghanistan. I think a lot of them were there for their own personal benefit, you know, because they had their own personal objectives. They wanted to be in a uniform and they wanted to make the money or they wanted to have the lifestyle. They wanted to go up in rank and maybe have a career or have a retirement. I mean, hey, whatever. Those are all practical considerations that are fine. It's just that in terms of being on a moral crusade of some kind, I would say that's really, I don't know that anybody actually picked that up or had that idea, because it's obvious that the controllers of the game are absolutely cynical and they just use propaganda and tell lies and use deceit to get what fabricated the means to get into war in the first place. Like if they completely controlled the beginning and the direction of the war and they profited from it very clearly. Halliburton and all these other companies that either served the military or were contractors or they made equipment for the military or sold anything to the army, they all profited. So it was clearly in their own self-interest. And in the case of the politicians and in the case of the fiasco of 9/11, I mean, I think once again, that's another topic that should be reserved for a different, like its own video itself.
Yeah.
But it's pretty really believed in it. Now they've pulled the plug on it. They've just canceled the whole mission. And I'm not really sure why they would do that other than for some underhanded means. Opinion. I look at the way it just has an uncanny resemblance to Vietnam. And there were reason for it to look that way or for it to happen that way. And yet they just kind of lazily and sloppily just it's kind of like the strategy is a really, really horrendous, a really horrendous maneuver the way that they left. And in terms of the public perception of it, like in terms of the mimetics or the view that you're presented, the way it's presented is just like Vietnam. So it's kind of like they took something from American history that is ostensibly real, like was ostensibly a real organic event, and then they modeled this after that, and they said, oh, look, it's just another Vietnam. This is just the way it goes. Oh, it's just because of Joe Biden's incompetence. It's because he's asleep at the wheel. And I'm thinking, is it really? Is that really the way it goes? That when you have trillions invested and you have stake, you're telling us to the incompetence and sleepiness of one, to the drowsiness of one man that was obviously only put in charge totally facetiously anyways. Like he was just put in charge as a political maneuver anyways.
Yes.
It just goes that way. Oh, it's just an accident. No. That's just the way it naturally happened. And it's like, no, it's because you guys fucked around on purpose and didn't plan the withdrawal. And you're withdrawing now at this time. I think they chose this time to withdraw because something else is going on that they've decided to phase in. They've decided to continue to the next step of program of some kind. That's what I think. I'm sorry. Your thoughts?
Okay. Because I was curious about a bunch of things. You've mentioned many things that I want to get back to. I just want to ask a question about something you mentioned a while back. You were talking about the people that they call the special forces now, and you were saying that they are different to the infantry, and that you think that there are some Jews and other weird people there, and they do kind of strange things, infiltrate or whatever. Can you just elaborate a bit more on how let's call it modern special forces work? What exactly are these buggers doing? Because this is kind of strange to me.
Well, I don't really know. I mean, if I was to say about them, I mean, I don't know if I can safely say that. The general idea that I get is that, yeah. Well, I mean, they even have, even when I was in the military, there were other people that told me this, that openly told me this, that
tell me.
Special forces is about training. It's about training people in the country that they're occupying or in the country they're operating in. It's about training the locals to do their bidding for them.
Yes. Okay. Now we're getting into that whole thing of you have, quotes, conquered this country, and now you're basically getting the locals to do your fighting for you. That's really the American, let's call it the modern American way. So the Afghans are now fighting the other Afghans, and the Iraqis, the good Iraqis, are fighting the bad Iraqis. And I must tell you, from our experiences here in Southern Africa, I don't think that those kinds of concepts work at all. You know, at the end of the day, if you aren't willing to fight your own battles, if you train others, especially if they're another race, and you're training them to do your bidding, they're going to do it very half-heartedly. I mean, we have the same thing with the blacks here. We use the blacks against the blacks in certain ways, like in the security businesses. So we use blacks to catch other blacks. But, you know, whenever that has been done, it's never the same as when you do the thing yourself.
Right. Well, I'm hoping that that's eventually the way it turns out to be when they use the white military against the white populations. I'm hoping that it turns out that they just kind of do the job half-ass. I guess that's kind of the way that modern cops are. They just don't do a very good job because they know that they're either not being allowed to do their job with actual integrity or being told to harass people that they really have no justification to pester, to bother with. They're being told to harass innocent people or people who are defending themselves. So the cops just kind of generally suck at their job here in America. And I think the military is going to be the same way. I think it has pretty much already become that way. Actually, I think probably most of the modern army is just not in I mean, it wasn't as bad when I was in. Now, with the Democrats in power, with their regime in power, and with their cultural warfare, I think, yeah, probably the American military is not, is really not very capable. I mean, they still have a lot of technology, a lot of weapons and vehicles, but in terms of the personal abilities or even the ability to fight as a group, like even the teamwork aspect of the American military, I feel like, yeah, they probably are not going to be very impressive in terms of squad maneuvers or platoon maneuvers or in terms of individual fighting skill or ability or even willingness to fight. I think that's probably all lapsed significantly even since I was in, and it was kind of bad when I was in.
Wow.
You know, I mean, really an army, like really a professional army. I mean, if you have any kind of historical context at all, like a professional army, these are guys who should be spending hours a day doing some kind of physical training, probably mostly cardio, but also like strength training. But they should be doing hours, and they should also be spending hours a day training with weapons. Like they should spend hours every day training with all kinds of different weapons. Nowadays, we did spend, you know, we did, especially at the first unit I was in, we spent a lot of time at the, so I got to the point where I could shoot fairly accurately. The second unit I went to, not so much. Those guys, I don't really have confidence they could have fought way through a wet paper bag. Like when we were going on a patrol, like the first patrol we went on in Afghanistan,
yeah,
this was the second unit I was with. Like the guys in my own team, I said, hey, carry this, let's take this 203 with us because we're going on a patrol. This is the first time we've been out there. I don't know what it's like. You don't know what it's like. The guys that have been here, they know what it's like, but you know, who the fuck knows if they're telling us what we should really, what we can really find when we get out there. So you bring this 203. I'll bring extra ammo.
What is a 203?
We're going to bring the 40 Bravo. The 203 is like a mortar tube that you can attach to your M16.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I wanted him to carry this, which would, I didn't even give him like a huge amount of shells to carry. I was like, eh, just carry, just bring that, attach it to your weapon, bring that and bring some rounds for it. He didn't want to do it. I mean, I was his team leader. I was superior to him in rank. He wouldn't do what I told him. The officers in the army, my first unit, the off had, he kind of looked like a Chad meme. Like you've seen those memes where they show this Chad guy that got huge jawbone and
yeah,
blonde spiky hair or blonde flat top hairdo or whatever. Well, yeah, this guy kind of looked like that. And he was just really muscular and in really good shape and a total egomaniac. But at least he had that going for him, that he believed in himself enough to, you know, build up his strength and his ability to fight. Which as an officer, you know, I mean, at that point, he was like a second or first lieutenant. So that it was still plausible that you'd have to conduct missions on foot in person with your guys. But once you get up to the level of like a captain and above, you're kind of more in a, you're in less of an upfront in combat role. You're more of an administrative or in a command role, like as in you're sitting at the command center telling people how to do this, or you're back at the rear and giving direct rate. That's the way it should be. But the second lieutenant that I had, this guy was probably like 50 at the time. He was like probably 50 or so, and he was a second lieutenant, and then I think he got promoted to a first lieutenant later on when we were deployed. He was kind of more of an academic type. Like, I think he spoke German, which was cool. He knew a lot of military history. He did not have any ability to lead or any ability to control his NCOs, though. Like, he didn't have the ability to control his men. And, I mean, I guess I don't blame him for it because I didn't have the ability to control my men because they were too fucking lazy. Is the problem. They were just too damn lazy. So, you know, that was the way it went on the first patrol I went on. But really, soldiers, like we should have spent a lot of time doing bayonet training. I know it sounds old fashioned. And,
yeah.
You know,
tell me.
To me, that's trad. We should have spent a lot of time doing that. We should have spent a lot of time doing like hand to hand combat training. We should have spent a lot of time doing maybe long range marksmanship. I had to go to like a special course for like 2 weeks to learn that. Basically, everybody should have spent a lot of time doing that long marksmanship training. But we just didn't really do it. Especially in my second unit I was at, there was a lot of dead, like a lot of downtime. Like,
are you there? Because I'm not sure if our sound is gone.
You know, peasant work.
Can you just repeat that?
The professional army should be doing, like the professional soldiers, huh?
I lost you there for about 30 seconds when I lost some of what you were some of what you were saying there, because my internet connection's maybe not that good. Can you just maybe repeat some of your stuff? I think the last I heard was bayonet training. You went on the marksmanship, special marksmanship course, and then I lost you.
Okay. It could also be my connection. That's the problem. But yeah, personally, I think we should practice a lot more. I think that the military, like a modern professional military, should do a lot more bayonet training, a lot more knife training, a lot more hand-to-hand combat training, a lot more long-range marksmanship training. Those are things that I think.
I want to fire away and ask some other questions. In terms of you guys sitting in Afghanistan now, how many of you were there at the time, and how many enemy do you have, and are you guys like getting reports saying, okay, this week or this month we killed so many enemy? Are you feeling happy about it? Or was everybody just getting up and doing his job as if he was some kind of pen pusher? He's not really interested in much. He doesn't really give a crap. It sounds like morale isn't that great. And how is the enemy? How are the Taliban and your enemies? Aren't they more motivated than you? They don't have the same weapons as you, but you know, aren't they showing initiative and determination, or are things relatively quiet most of the time?
I mean, things in Afghanistan were relatively quiet most of the time. I'd say probably in terms of the way that our soldiers were, probably the latter was the case, meaning that I don't know about pin pushing necessarily while we were deployed anyways. I mean, definitely while we were at home, there was a lot of administrative time. But mostly while we were deployed in Afghanistan, we were just kind of really lazy because we were stuck on this really small post and we were pulling guard duty every night. And we did get resupplied well enough. We weren't like dying for supplies, but it was just kind of like really low grade shitty stuff, you know, like especially the diet we were eating was not good. I think we had like a tent with some weights in it that we could use to exercise. But otherwise, we didn't have much space to go running or jogging or do like cardio exercise.
And it doesn't.
Basically, we had.
And if I may interrupt, it doesn't sound to me like you are actually having much contact with the enemy, or are you doing intelligence on the ground? It sounds very, very quiet, if I may say so. Am I correct?
Yes, it was a total change of pace from when I was in Iraq. In Iraq, we were doing missions every night, and we frequently arrested or took custody of people and were, you know, gathering information from them. And we did get shot at and did return fire for my particular platoon, but the other platoon did, I think, at least like three or four times. In Iraq, they did find one of the persons of interest they were after, and they killed him. Actually, they killed his whole family because they said that he had a suicide vest and they were trying to use it after he was shot. I don't know if that's true or if they just went in, because it was the first and second squad that went in that. I don't know if they just like shot everything in sight, because that was towards the end of deployment and we were about to leave. And they, I don't know, wanted to have fun shooting their guns. There was one point at which we were on patrol, and I believe it was first squad as well. I went into someone's front yard, and this was just apparently some guy, like it was just somebody in the neighborhood that we were patrolling. He opened his door, and so they shot first, you know, rather than give him a chance to. Turned out he wasn't armed, though. Turned out that he wasn't armed, and yeah. So they were trigger happy in Iraq. In Afghanistan, we were in a really rural setting. It was really kind of quiet. And we did have Afghans, probably like 30 or 50 of them, that were coming by to train or coming by to get indoctrination of some kind. And so we were kind of working with them, and they were allowed to come in to the post. And so that, yeah, it was a lot more calm at that point. They did have people that were from the official Afghan army that were there in their own tent that would come for operations and for training. So we went on a couple of patrols, but for the most part, we just did guard duty. Nothing happened when we went on patrol. So I don't really know that there was much enemy presence there. I mean, how I would define enemy presence is, like, if it was an enemy presence, we would know it because they would be actively working on a plan to harm us and or, you know, kill us. They're damaging our equipment or kill us.
Yeah.
And that didn't really happen. And for the same reason, I feel like we didn't have much, like, we were not really much of a hostile presence there either, because I feel like if we were, we would be working on a plan to destroy somebody's equipment or kill them. Like, if we were there to actually fight them.
Yes.
We didn't really do that too often. There was like one case where we went out on patrol where they said that there were some landmines that were set the night prior that had been left out there, and we were going to go there and destroy them. But now when I think back on the incident, I kind of feel like it was the guys that were running the post. They just wanted to take us out and act like they were doing something, because these were totally modern devices that they had out there, and they were just kind of like lazily set out in a field somewhere. And one of them was set like at the corner of a building. And I'm like, who the fuck is stupid enough to put these? I mean, I know Afghans are stupid, but are they stupid enough to put these here where they're going to have like no effect on anything really? Like, they're not on a road. They're not near anything that we would have any reason to go to. So are they just trying to like put a landmine in a farm so that one of their neighbors will step on it? And where did they get this landmine that looks like a modern landmine? So I think that the guys that were there set it out there so that they could then write down that they went out and detonated, so that they could say, we did something today. So yeah, Afghanistan was a huge waste of time. Probably the debacle at the airport, the Bagram airfield, when the guys were leaving, was probably the most action that's happened there in years. You know, Trump famously dropped a MOAB on somebody that was supposedly, I think, Al-Qaeda or ISIS. He supposedly dropped a MOAB on them back in, what was it, 2018? And after that, I think things were pretty quiet. Because, you know, a MOAB kind of produces a deafening. After a MOAB goes off, there's kind of a deafening silence afterwards, because everybody's just trying to process what the fuck happened. It's like a whole world came apart.
Yeah, mother of all bombs.
You know? So I guess when he did that, it made, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that, it made it clear to them that he was willing to use excessive. And that's good. I mean, that's the way wars should be fought.
Yes. But no, you're talking.
And yeah. But in the case of this withdrawal from Kabul, like in the case of the American withdrawal, I mean, even just as a person using common sense, and I was just a regular soldier, I've never been trained as an officer, but even just as a person with common sense, I feel like it should have been entirely possible, and obviously the thing to do, that they should have planned it in such a way that all of the uniformed military personnel and anyone else that they had a reason to take with them, they should have had enough planes and already prepared to go, so that they could, like, within a matter of minutes, they could all just board the aircraft and they could close up the ramps and take off, either all at the same time or one after the other. And they should also have had some kind of air support in the area, just constantly cruising around the airfield to make sure that nobody could come in and attack them. But instead, the way they did it was they just allowed clusters of random people to go on a fucking airfield and like grab onto the landing gear of the planes and try to run into the planes and ride out with them. And then apparently some American citizens were left behind.
Because,
according to the Republicans, should have been taken out. So you were saying?
Because some of the things that, like, from what you're describing, Afghanistan was quiet when you were there. And then Trump went in 2018 and made sure he scared them. So how the hell is it that you go from Trump scaring them and everything's quiet to the next thing we know is suddenly the Taliban is taking over the country? And by the way, and I must tell you, South Africans here, white guys here, we were all looking at the vast quantity of military equipment, American military equipment, that fell into the hands of the enemy, and our jaws are literally hanging on the ground. We can't believe that they managed to get that. How the hell did they get it? The best that we could think of is that maybe this is the Afghan army that you guys have been training, and that all their equipment ended up in the hands of the Taliban. And how is it, these are among the mysteries that are bugging me. How is it that the Taliban can start capturing towns and cities, and that somehow the American military, the generals, the politicians either don't know about it or don't care? And that the next thing you know is this is going on for 2-3 weeks or however long. And all this equipment's in their hands. And where are the American troops that are on the ground? You know, how can an enemy army capture equipment without fighting? To me, it's like there's a bunch of stuff at the end that makes no sense at all. Because if there's fighting, then, you know, why wasn't somebody saying, oh, the Afghan army is fighting and they're losing and the American army needs to back them up or come in and help them, or we need reinforcements? There's a whole bunch of stuff that's missing to me. Like, what? How the hell could it end like this? There must be something that's gone very wrong between 2018's Moab and 2021, suddenly Kabul, country taken over, chaos, America's retreating. What the fuck happened in between? That to me is like a whole mystery area.
Yeah, I'm guessing that subterfuge happened in between. I mean, that's the most plausible explanation. I'm guessing that they decided they were going to do this a certain way for whatever reason. And I think it's because something else is going to happen. Something else is coming on the way that we're going to find out later. And it's going to make, I mean, they'll probably deny it, of course. Like, there'll be no way for us to actually track down the paper trail. But it'll be basically obvious that they allowed it to happen by doing this. What they've done now is that they set it up so that it would happen. But I mean, this has been going on since, like, what, 2014 or 2015? When they discovered that the fucking ISIS people had weapons and military vehicles that they took from Iraq. Like, okay. Like, we've been discovering this all this time, that all these mercenary armies or these fucking bands of marauders or whatever they're fighting for, it's hard to even tell. I guess for Islamic extremism, that's like a really easy thing to say, oh, that's what they're fighting for. So ISIS has been using American weapons and equipment for years now. And so it seems like this is just like the finale, like the big finale, where we left them $85 billion worth of equipment. And I mean, I don't know how to respond to that exactly. I mean, but then if you think about it, and from my experience, like, I remember in Missouri, cool, especially in a lot of the installations in the Middle East. There's just a lot of junk equipment laying around that was not maintained properly, or the mechanic couldn't, or whatever happened. It's just deadlined, you know. It hit an IED, or maybe it just wasn't properly maintained, and they couldn't get the parts they needed to fix it. So I wonder how many of these pieces of equipment were the same. Like, that was the same situation in Afghanistan. So it's kind of frightening when you just hear that, huh?
So you think some of the equipment they got was damaged, but that couldn't be true for all of it. And there are hundreds of aircraft, tens of thousands of vehicles. Would it be on such a scale?
I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of waste in the military, but I'm not saying that's necessarily the case now, because who knows? I mean, with this fucking regime we've got in charge now, with the Democrats and the communists, they've been using ISIS. Like, John McCain went and hung out with ISIS. Like, there's pictures of this. It's public knowledge that John McCain was palling around with ISIS fighters. Like, he went and met with them personally.
Now, McCain,
so it's been well known that, like, the American regime throughout the years, like, they've it's almost so incredible, it's so ridiculous that they'll declare someone their enemy, and then you find out later, oh well, they were out with them against Assad or against whoever. They did give them weaponry, they did supply them because they wanted them to fight Assad in Syria. Like, it's really insane. I'm sure you agree, but with the Afghanistan situation, I don't know. It looked like they might have left them some brand new weapons, like some of the rifles and machine guns. They might have just been brand new and just left there for them to use. And in the case of, well, there was at least one working helicopter, because they used it to fly up and drop a guy on a rope. Like, they did a Augusto Pinochet ritual and hanged a guy from a helicopter right after the Americans left. So they got at least one of them to work, you know. But I don't know if really anyone in the Middle East is going to be able to make much use of that equipment, even if it was functional. They're going to have to fuel, and they're going to have to maintain it, and they're going to have to be able to pilot it. And I just feel like they're not going to be able to do that. Now, on the other hand, if some other power like Russia or China moved in and helped them, or sent advisors to go and use it for them, you know.
Or go and grab.
If they sent their special forces to go and use that equipment. Yeah.
Okay. So you. All right. That seems more plausible and
dangerous scenario to me.
But still, it's an enormous amount of waste. Because, I mean, normally, if you go and look World War II, World War I, any other war, in fact, you'll find that no army lets any other army get anything. At the very least, you blow it all up. At the very least. And that didn't happen. But you also right. now ask questions about the people in charge. And John McCain, yes, I'm aware of John McCain. And then there's also John Kerry and his weird Vietnam times. All these people are real filthy scum, and they've got all kinds of weird stuff going on. You know, when I look at the way the CIA operates, and just the way that your leaders are operating, it's almost like they're thinking like a bunch of Jews, because this is not normal European white Western way of doing anything. But it's like America functions like a Jew. This is my enemy, but he's not my enemy. But you love your enemy, or all kinds of weird, crazy stuff. And, you know, going back to the whole third world way of thinking, these other people, when they see white people operating like that, they must be thinking to themselves, these white people, like I'll tell you about blacks in Africa, for example. The blacks in Africa could tell the difference between when the whites were strong and the whites would just go and bash them. And then they could see, oh, the whites are not so strong anymore. Now the whites are talking nicely to us. The whites are losing. They, even though they are third world, they can easily perceive weakness. Weakness. And they say, those whites, they're weak. And we're winning. And I'm almost certain that those kinds of people that you were dealing with in Iraq and Afghanistan, they must be seeing the same thing. They can't be fooled by all this weird Jewy kind of diplomacy. They must be saying America's weak, eh? Don't you think?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, even the TV here in America is saying that. So yeah, I mean, everybody knows it. And it's kind of like it's almost been designed to be that way. I mean, there was no other reason for it to happen that way. It's just that the political leaders and the media and the schools and the cultural institutions, like the people to change the public culture and that are training kids to think this way or training people to think this way or putting out this narrative with this air of office, like this is the official narrative. So everybody's got to treat it. It's kind of like they've just intentionally sapped all the morale and all the power of the country. Most yes. definitely of the white Americans.
Yes.
They've just intentionally sabotaged it.
Absolutely.
Because I mean, if there was any, yeah. Because I mean, look, I'm getting older. I'm in my 30s now. But physically.
<That's> still young.
Yeah. But I mean, compared to when I was 18, actually, I think I was 17 when I technically joined, but 18 when I was done with training and everything, like, and 19 or something when I was in Iraq, I don't remember. But physically, I can still do probably everything that I could do back then. Like, physically, I'm probably as strong and as fast or as capable as I was then. But mentally speaking, like, I guess I'm really not fit for military service anymore. Not up with being shit on all the time by your superiors. Like, I've got enough of an attitude, or I guess I've matured enough now that I feel like I should be the one in charge. But in terms of like fighting other people, like, I guarantee it's infinitely easier for me to write them off and be like, yeah, no, they're in the way. I can do whatever I want to them. Yeah, no, they're obstructing the mission that I'm on, or no, they look like they might be hostile. Let's take them out just to be sure.
You know?
So there's no reason, like if we had a serious mission, like if you had a mission and if you had actual people of intelligence in charge that were going to decide how to best people to do it, and they're going to give them everything they need to do it, there's not going to be a reason why America conquer the world again. Right people, give them the weapons and the power, tell them to go do it. They'll fucking do it.
Yes.
It's the same with South Africa. It's the same with any white country. You find the right people. You find the people that are pissed off about what you're doing to their fucking country. You give them the weapons and the power. Give them the office to do it. They'll go kill whoever's causing the trouble. They'll do it fairly easily. I bet you it would not be a problem.
Definitely. And definitely. Then, now we're talking.
Yeah, and then just take control of the media and put it out on the media that, oh yeah, our soldiers are training real fucking hard and they're killing your asses. That is not over. Immediately these niggers and fucking Arabs are going to be shitting themselves. Okay, during the first Gulf War, like there were hundreds of thousands of Iraqis surrendering, like throwing down their weapons and surrendering even to camera crews, like even to the media that was there just like recording this. They would surrender to anybody who had anything that looked like it could have been a gun. So like one of the largest tasks of my second unit while they were deployed in the first Gulf War, you know, this is one of their legacy items, is that they were charge of managing these hundreds of thousands of soldiers. And it's like, wow. Like they told me about that. Like, yeah, they were surrendering basically just to camera crews at that point. So,
now you're talking, you know, when you scare the shit out of them, they will quickly, the real force and real power that speaks. And all this liberal Jewish crap, that stuff is gonna make you lose when you shouldn't be losing at all. There it is, coming right out of your own mouth. Really.
I mean, there's no reason for us to be losing other than people have chosen to lose, or the people that are in charge, they for us, and they've said, you're going to lose now. We're going to have the new Chinese century or the new Eurasian century or whatever stupid fucking program they've got, whatever kike nonsense they've got in mind.
Yes.
They've decided, we're going to put out the message that we're going to start talking about trannies now. We're going to have gay people serving in the army. We're going to talk about white guilt now in all the schools. We're going to mental medical procedures. We don't have any fucking, well, you don't know what's in it. They know what's in it. We're going to release a virus from a lab in Wuhan that fucking Fauci and the NIH were sending money to them and collaborate. American doctors and scientists were collaborating with them.
Yes.
To conduct this gain of function research on viruses that existed in animals naturally, but now they can exist in humans. So, you know, it's the fucking controllers that have decided to do this, and we've allowed them to be in control, and that's the problem, really.
Yeah.
You know, I live in a conservative area. I live around conservatives, and conservatives are the most unthinking and simple-minded people, unfortunately. They just don't realize the degree to which the Jews have really taken control of their minds and taken control of their society. And really fucked everything up for them. And they just won't even, they can't even think of that. They're like, what? What do you mean? No, of course I don't mind the Jews. The Jews are awesome. If I hated Jews, I would be a Nazi. And it's yeah. But they're just, they're that simple is really the problem. So I don't know what's going to come of this. I kind of feel like the whole Afghan debacle was designed. I mean, it was kind of designed from the beginning. I feel like, you know, for various different reasons, to have various different effects. Essentially, America occupied a country that was going to sell opium sacklers, and Big Pharma was going to make all these pain pills that they're giving to us because there's no other effective means of managing pain, apparently. So a lot of Americans are addicted to and dying because of opiates. And there's like one place in the world some of the opiates come from, and it's Afghanistan. Isn't that interesting?
But
now apparently they've poisoned us. Yeah.
So it's true that the opium fields were being protected and they were producing as much opium and et cetera. That's all true.
I mean, that's, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not that they were producing as much. They were producing more. Beforehand, when the Taliban had control of the country, apparently they weren't producing any. Or it was very hard.
You're kidding
me. That's what I've heard.
So American occupation made them produce, or under American occupation, opium production goes through the roof.
Apparently.
Good God.
Yeah, you should look up something. You should look up a man called Patrick Tillman. I never knew the guy. Apparently, from what I heard, though, he was unhappy about America's role and the production of opium there in Afghanistan, and he was dissatisfied with the soldiers in his unit turning a blind eye or facilitating it. And apparently, he ended up dead.
He
was planning to,
the football player.
He was planning to disclose this. Yes. So you should look into that. I mean, I don't know the facts. Probably the facts have been hidden, but there was a lot of people saying that he was complaining about it and he wanted to disclose this publicly, and then he ended up dead. I mean, I've heard other rumors as well. I guess I probably shouldn't voice them because I don't know.
Fire away.
But you should look into it, because apparently some people said, yeah, there's always rumors. I mean, that's part of the war, I guess, is trying to find the truth. Truth is the first casualty in war, but some people said that he was shot from very close up and that he was shot with like 5.56 weapons, you know, the ones that Americans use. So,
yeah.
At that time, the Afghans wouldn't have had those.
Yes. You see, this is very interesting. You're talking about the destruction of the white morale of America. Though I must tell you, when I look at the way things are going and things have gone here in South Africa, the whites are being driven out of everything. And you can see white morale going down. Even attorneys stop believing in their careers. Everybody stops believing in their careers and they find themselves out in limbo. And it looks to me like all whites everywhere are heading down that path, except if you're dumb enough to still believe in the official narrative, which I think is becoming harder and harder to do. But I kind of foresee that there's going to be a time where most of the good police are not in the police. They're out, they're private citizens, they're doing something else. The military, the pilots, all the best of the whites are ultimately going to be driven out of the official positions. But the thing that I like to remind people is that, you can't judge a soldier or anybody else just by his uniform. And so keep in mind that when the real shit hits the fan at some point, when there are whites who've had a guts full of this and they don't believe in the bullshit anymore, the funny thing that is yet to occur is that rather common looking white men, not who don't look that particularly fantastic or well armed, they might be the real army and they're gonna destroy the official structures. This is what I think is gonna come in the long term when we get down to revolution, civil war, because it looks to me like the Western world is heading into that path. And you're gonna find that the whites are driven out, blacks and Jews are running most everything. And then at the end of the day, skill still matters. To give you an example, when Napoleon took control of the army of Italy, the French army in Italy, the men didn't have boots. Their clothing, they were literally dressed in rags, and yet they went on to smash professional armies and to beat them. So the thing I like to think of is that regardless of the official structures, regardless of the theft, regardless of the lies, as long as the whites who matter are still on the side of the masses of the whites, we can still turn things around. Because it looks like anything that's good, they're destroying anything that's good. And I almost get the feeling that they're also trying to corrupt the high-ranking military officers. I see that there are quite a lot of generals and things going into retirement in the US Army, and they seem to retire at quite an early age as well. And they go into retirement, and the first thing they do is they become millionaires. And I find that kind of strange, and I wonder how much of that is also just corruption. Because we also had things like that in South Africa where when our government became suicidal, when let's call it when we had our Biden, who was called FW de Klerk, when he came to power, the first thing he did was he started firing certain generals, one after the other, top-ranking policemen, top-ranking generals getting kicked out one after the other. And you guys have been through a number of such phases. Obama did a lot of that. And I'm sure that as the enemy is taking over, they're busy looking for, who's going to be the general who's going to rally the troops against the government, et cetera. Ah, that guy, let's get rid of him, get rid of him. And, I think that that is a lot of what's been going down when I look at what's happening to your country.
Yeah, well, I feel like they did that to portray us early on. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that much about the guy. I think his grandson, I remember seeing his grandson's Fort Benning while I was in training. So
Yeah.
his family is all of that basically. But they basically disgraced and forced him into resignation. And I don't know if he was, I mean, he probably wasn't one of our guys, but who knows? He might have been a decent guy. I'm not sure. But they were trying to do the same thing with, who was it that Trump appointed as his last Secretary of Defense? I think it was Miller was the guy's name.
Okay.
I read a little bit about him when I found this out, but they've been screaming to try and get him out of there forever because apparently the Clintons did not like him. Like, apparently he was really suspicious of the fucking Clintons. And so they were really mad when Trump appointed him. Okay. But, yeah, we have a lot of generals that are fucking traitors, like this guy called Mark Milley.
Yes, I've been hearing about him.
This evil troll called Mark Milley. And apparently he's been recorded as saying that he was going to warn the Chinese in case of a U.S. strike against them or in case Trump decided to take some kind of aggressive posture against them. He was going to give them forewarning about it.
Insane. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the kind of fucking sleazeballs we got in charge now. That's Biden's crew. And then recently they just relieved, I think it was 18 or so, or they relieved a bunch of senior instructors at West Point. They just notified them that they were going to be relieved.
Ah, yeah. You see, the military is the first place that they've got to take over in order to pull off their revolution, because those are the guys whose task it is to defend the country. But you know, with all this Jewish globalist liberal crap, you know, and the way they go about things, destroying your mind, confusing you, nationalism. I find it insane that in North America and America that nationalism is almost like a crime. You know, you're almost like a terrorist if you believe in nationalism. But nationalism is the only thing that existed, and nationalism is what made America and every other Western nation great. So, you know, the Jews have turned everything on its head, and people, you've got real traitors on the one hand, and then you just got confused whites who don't know up from down and left from right, because they can't understand all these weird cultural values and weird norms that are just coming at them from every side. But deep down, what pleases me though is when people really start getting pissed off, when there were cops who were resigning and so forth, because the angry man who leaves, he's going to be on our side, and that pleases me. And COVID is pleasing me because I'm seeing doctors and nurses starting to go crazy, and people not able to handle the deception. So I still think that the truth is coming out more and more. I'm seeing it more and more. But I think the way that it's going, all whites everywhere are heading down a path where all whites everywhere are going to believe in nothing. They're going to look at all their leaders, wherever they are, and they're going to regard them as garbage. And in recent weeks, I've been thinking a lot to myself that there are probably almost no whites left on the planet who are ruled by, let's call it, proper whites. I think that if there are any, they might be in small countries hidden away here and there, but definitely not in any of the major countries. And you're either ruled by your own traitors who are working with the Jews, or you're like South Africans who are ruled by another race who hate your guts. But I don't think there are almost any whites left on the planet who are ruled by decent leaders at all, I think.
Yeah, that's basically my summation of the situation. I mean, in the case of America, we're largely just ruled by another race that hates and wants to completely exterminate us. And I'm referring to Jews, obviously. Yes. We're led by, I mean, we have people that are mouthpieces like Dan Crenshaw or after the Biden withdrawal from Afghanistan, the Republicans were trying to make a big deal of it. And I mean, it is a big deal depending on which way you look at it. I mean, obviously to us, it's a big deal because we don't want the refugees. We don't want Afghan migrants. There's absolutely no civilized country that can withstand having them at large in its borders. You can't. They are not. They're completely savage. But the thing is, the Republican response to it was just so incredible. I mean, they're talking about American citizens left behind, but then later on you find that most of them chose to because they had families there and not allowed to go with them because they weren't citizens. And I'm thinking, okay, so you mean Afghans who have an American passport or have a green card of some kind or whatever, a student visa. Because there were apparently college students that went there to Kabul for a vacation or something. And I'm like, what kind of American college student is going to go to Afghanistan for a vacation? So you mean obviously they were Afghan students, like there were Afghans that were just studying here in America or what? But furthermore, or it's like, They have this outrage over the over what happened, but then I saw this this I think it was on the floor of Congress or it was in some committee room where Dan Crenshaw and a bunch of other conservative politicians or generals or commanders, they were talking about this and they were really throwing a fit about the withdrawal and saying we're going to end up going back. And you know, Dan Crenshaw, he's a former Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
I suppose he lost an eye in some debacle that happened when he was deployed, I think, or at least that's the official story, is that he lost it. I think an IED exploded and it damaged his eye. I don't know. So ostensibly, he's supposed to be the cream of the crop. Like, he's supposed to be the best that our nation can produce. A Navy SEAL, wounded veteran, who's supposed to be served as a representative of his people. But he just has the most ridiculous and most absurd, like just the most played out garbage to say about everything. I remember he was threatening the Groypers, the Nick Fuentes people, because they went and asked some questions about dogged support for Israel, like his fanatical support for Zionism. And he said, you guys are going to regret this later because it's being recorded. We're going to know who you are. Like, he's basically low-key threatening American citizens for asking him questions and for questioning his dual loyalties. But this is supposed to be the most elite person that we can produce, apparently. And he has no devotion to his own country and his own people. It's all directed towards Jews and Israel and Zion. You know, and what he had to say in response to this Afghan withdrawal, he's saying, thinks that he's pronouncing something very profound and very edgy. He's saying, well, we weren't in Lebanon was bombed, or we weren't at war when the Trade World Trade Center was attacked the first time in the 90s, and we weren't at war until it was attacked in 2001. Somebody at war with us. He's saying someone was at war with us, and we didn't catch on to the fact. And I'm just thinking, wow, Dan, now that really is something. How true it is. That is so profound. True. Yeah, not at war, but somebody else is at war with us. And who is it? Well, Jews. According to him, it's the fucking Muslims. But in reality, it's his fucking fighters and his campaign backers. It's the people that he represents. We've never really been at war with them, except for maybe isolated events in history when it became so fucking obvious. They became such an odious presence that we couldn't ignore it anymore. But other than that, we've never really been at war with the Jews. They've always been at war with us, demoralize us, eventually just exterminate us completely.
Now, you know, I totally agree.
Because they're assumed by spite and vindictiveness.
I totally agree with you because, you know, especially the psychological war on whites, and it seems to be so intensive in your country. I was just looking again. I grabbed an old encyclopedia yesterday, I've got an encyclopedia from 1963, a Collier's encyclopedia set, which is American. And I decided to read up a bit on liberalism. But while I was looking through it, I was looking at next to liberalism is library. And I'm looking at these photographs of libraries in America, and I'm looking at the people in the libraries, and everybody is white. And that is 1963. It's looking beautiful, clean, and everybody's white. And when I was a kid, America was 90% white, you know? And now being white in America is almost a crime. It's literally almost a crime. It can almost destroy you now. And things have certainly changed, eh? It's how crazy is this?
Yeah.
But it's
because of these, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you said, the war that's raging that you didn't know is raging. But yeah. And it's like everybody who gets into any position of power, and this seems to be everywhere. I must admit, I'm starting to understand more why Alex Linder talks about the Jews control everything. It's true that you can't get into any position of power in any way whatsoever without somehow being linked to them. Like you say, whether it's a Republican or whatever, he's either a shill for Israel. But if you are a normal white who stands up for yourself, you can't become rich, you can't be promoted, you'll never become a general, you'll never become a high-ranking politician, you'll never be in charge of a newspaper. And I think to some of the liberals and Jews that I spoke to here in South Africa as well, in the days when I still dealt with them, I began to realize that among the wealthy, there is some kind of glass ceiling. There is a filtering process, but whites, the average white doesn't know about it. There's a filtering process in every part of society, and you just don't know that it exists. You think there's a free market. You think that there's free speech. You think that there's this freedom and that freedom, and you think things work this way, but all of those imaginary freedoms you believe we have, they actually don't exist. It's very weird, very freaky. Eh?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. We're in a total crisis. We're in a state of crisis right now. And our leaders are totally. And like I was saying earlier, you know, this guy is supposedly the most elite, best. He's the best that we have to offer. Apparently, this Dan Crenshaw, but it's almost like it doesn't even matter. I mean, you and I both are militarily inclined or military-minded people. We have a lot of respect or admiration for the ideals of a military organization, or I guess such as carry with a society with a military purpose, maybe. So we have a lot of respect for that ideal, but then you look at the manifestation of it as it is now, as it is currently under the paradigm that we live under. And it produces people like Dan Crenshaw. And I don't really care what his qualifications are or what his experience is. The fact is that nothing can take place of truthfulness. At this point, nothing can substitute for truthfulness. And he clearly doesn't have it because he knows who's really in charge and he knows what they're really doing. And he goes out there and mouths this lie. Goes out pronouncing these lies about Muslims are the ones we need to be afraid of. It's like we could deal with them so easily in the blink of an eye, no longer be a threat. And they have almost no influence at all. What can they do? They can go and be a refugee somewhere and rape some kids or attack one. Well, what can the goddamn Muslims do? Almost nothing, unless you give them $85 billion worth of equipment. And then you still got to make sure they know how to use it or make sure somebody can use it for them under the auspices of their being Muslim. So the guy is just such a, like, such an inherently deceitful, like a person with no integrity, that he's going to do this. He's going to say these things at the point when we really need more than anything to just hear the truth, the actual truth. Have the courage to do it. Or he doesn't care. Maybe he's just an evil person. Maybe it's not that he's afraid. It's just that he's evil, apparently, because he's willing to lie and he's willing to ignore the fundamental crisis of faith. You know? And then we have these other leaders like Rand Paul. I guess I shouldn't even call him a leader. I don't think he really even believes in the concept of authority. He's a libertarian Christian.
Yeah.
But he was questioning Fauci about the origins of the coronavirus. Basically, he just already presented it. Like, he basically laid it bare, and it's been video recorded, and it's on goddamn YouTube and on TV.
Yes. That
Fauci and the NIH were sending money and collaborating with Chinese laboratories to produce the coronavirus. So this whole fucking pandemic was man-made. And so he knows that. He confrontation with Fauci openly in one of these hearing rooms. And Fauci lied to the Congress. So he didn't immediately order him to be arrested. Lifted at that, and that was the end of the conversation. It's like, are you fucking kidding me, man? How do we have these goddamn libertarian Christian white guys in charge or in positions of authority or representing us even, when they apparently are using armies and the police to protect the society or to punish the people that are destroying our society? But those are the fucking representatives we've got, you know?
Well, the thing,
I mean, that is ridiculous. That's pathetic. Should have immediately ordered that he be arrested or shot to death.
Well, now that you're talking about shooting people, I don't say this much, but I'll tell you something. I've been thinking that there are lots and lots and lots of elite people who are going to need to be executed someday. And I was reading about all these super rich who are moving to islands and things and so forth. And I think that they are preparing to run. But I hope that whites are angry enough in the future that it won't matter which island they run to. We're going to hunt them down one day. I tell you, when I look at the filth that's in charge, I don't think in our history, probably the last time we were in such a mess as this might have been at the time of the collapse of the Roman Empire. But this is not natural for our race. It's not natural for our people. It's not the way we think. And all kinds of garbage have been promoted to the top. And I like the way that you say this guy is apparently the best we have, because I myself no longer believe that the best are in any way near the top. I think that all across everything, whether even in science, it hardly matters anymore which field you're looking at. To me, I'm quite certain that they've already weeded out and gotten rid of the best of our people. The best of our people are not at the top. They are somewhere else. The greatest geniuses, the greatest technical geniuses, scientists, the people with the most honesty, etc., and honor, they are nowhere in these organizations. They've been weeded out a long time ago. But that makes me feel that when counter-revolution and revolution and civil war comes, which it must do, I can't see that these things can continue indefinitely. And it's hit such crisis proportions in the last year and a half. And I look at economics as well. I cannot see how even America is going to get out of this. The only thing I can see is that they're going to print money until we have hyperinflation globally, even because there's nothing else to do. That they can only try to keep the scam alive to the maximum. You know, keep lying about it, keep tricking people, but eventually it's got to collapse. And that's where I really have hope. My real hope is actually war, civil war. Because you need the honorable, strong men to get together and to start smashing and kicking and beating and sorting out things until things are fixed again. And, you know, history is history, and you cannot change the way things work. And, you know, there may have been wars for tens of thousands of years. There will be wars until the end of time, until we no longer exist. And war definitely has its place. In fact, I would even argue that we are not fighting as much as we should. We should actually be fighting a whole lot more. And you know, another thing about America that was striking me is that if you study the wars between the Romans and the Carthaginians, the Carthaginians and the Romans had a totally different mindset. The Romans were, let's call it, nationalistic and militaristic. But the Carthaginians were business people, traders. There were lots of Jews among the Carthaginians. And that's also where you get all the baby sacrifice and stuff. So the Carthaginians were like this trading empire that didn't really care for the military much. And then they produced the greatest general they ever had, Hannibal, who was a white guy. And Hannibal went and invaded Italy and fought the Romans until he couldn't anymore. But America today is a lot like Carthage. It has the wealth, but it has no respect for its own military. It has no respect for the men who hold society together. And so, you know, that's where the Romans were awesome. The Romans stuck with that thing, and that is what made them last as long as it did. And so I think that, you know, America is going to have to collapse. And of course, you got China and Russia sitting in the wings, waiting to see what they can do, you know, when America collapses. But honestly, I think civil war is coming to the West. And I actually welcome it, because I think that no normal person can live like this, that our race, that we have certain values. There are certain values we have. And I've noticed in my travels, whether it was to the Fash Bash and to America or to Canada, or even the one time I went to Holland, I noticed that all people of European descent, all whites, we've got certain values that are almost exactly the same. You know, that whether you're a Boer living in South Africa or somebody living in America, you actually have very much the same values. And this Jewish takeover of Western civilization is just going to freak people out until people can't take it anymore. And I think we're heading well down that path, you know, when the Roman Empire collapsed, when it collapsed in its final days, it reached a point where it wasn't that the barbarians, the other Europeans, it wasn't that the barbarians were coming in and were defeating the Roman armies. It was that the Romans were so demoralized themselves that they didn't even want to fight, that men were cutting off their own thumbs so that they didn't have to go to war. And it almost looks to me like your military, you guys are heading down that path. But, you know, just because the system is corrupt doesn't mean we must lose faith in the rest of our people. It's just that the Jews have hijacked everything at the top, but that doesn't mean that everybody is buggered. There are more and more people waking up, and that for me is, that's what I look at. I don't worry about the official structures. I know that in history, the revolutionaries can crush the official structures. You just need enough people and enough people of skill, and you'll take your country back. You'll take you, you know, it, and that's probably why they keep focusing on private gun ownership, because the weapons in the hands of the private people, those are the weapons that can get America back and make America white again. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, they're afraid of them for a reason. I guess the problem that we have is, I mean, what happened recently with the Biden mandate on vaccines, I mean, I don't know if it actually happened, but there's, once again, rumors that a lot of officers, I guess, in the military, because officers can resign, a lot of the pilots for the bombers or for the fighter jets, they're actually officers, so they can resign from their job. So apparently they resigned because they didn't want to take the vaccine, and apparently there's a lot of soldiers and a lot of federal workers. Like, this mandate applies to all government workers. And apparently they're also trying to include any companies that have over 100 employees. So a lot of people are quitting, apparently, you know, including a lot of people in the military. And I mean, eventually of necessity, we're going to get over it. You're right that nationalism is a crime here in America, and we got to get over that. Like, we have to get over this silly libertarian idea that American white people have, that you can't have serious hierarchy and organization in a society. Like, you can't be a part of an organization because that makes you a terrorist, or you can't be a part of a militia or whatever because that makes you a right-wing extremist. You know, we kind of need to stop that, because that's basically what the enemy's whole strategy has been this whole time, is to ensure that white people can't have our own organizations that protect us or protect our way of life. They've done everything. They've spent such an insane amount of time on this to make sure that white people cannot organize and have our own leadership, that we have to, that the only way we can be a part of any organization is by joining the ones that they created or that they control and decide who's in charge of. So that has to end, obviously. I mean, I feel really disappointed in a lot of these military personnel if that's actually what they're doing. They're just resigning when they obviously know what they have to do, which is take control of their organization or whatever part of the organization to fight. Like, they have to protect their country. I mean, when I say these things about Fauci, I mean, what just happened, what has just come to light, is that these people were engaging in bioterrorism. I'm no way that that's absolutely what it was. There's no way to refute that at all. They were participating in this. They were paying for it. They were researching this, creating a deadly virus. That's a bioweapon. Now that they've released it, even if they claimed it was an accident, it doesn't really matter. They were creating it. What the hell were we planning to do with it? But now they're effectively using it as a terrorist weapon, because they're forcing the population to concede to these medical procedures, to take this experimental vaccine that they're trying to call medicine. They're cynically calling this a medicine. And they're forcing the population to take it. So it should be pretty obvious where this is going. They're going to have complete control over your health. They're going to have complete control over you, a logical being, or as your, they're going to have control of the medical aspect of your life, because they've just found out, they've just learned from this, that they can research these deadly viruses. They can release them, even if they try to claim it's an accident. They can just make it plausibly look like an accident. Once it's released, well, that means billions and trillions in funding for these new vaccines that are going to be created. And it's already going that. Like, we're already on that treadmill where they say, oh, there's the new Delta variant, and you're going to have to get booster shots every however long, probably twice a year.
Well,
so we're already going that way. And it's like, guys, this is bioterrorism. This fucking bioterrorism, it's a terrorist act that threatens the very fiber of our being. It threatens everything about our existence. It threatens everything about our life.
Well,
even if it didn't kill us, even if the virus didn't kill us, they're taking control of every aspect of our lives now. So what the fuck are you going to do about it? So this is absurd that they should think that the right thing to do is just resign. I mean, unless we're going to immediately go join some militia, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's insane. Paul would conclude his talk without saying, arrest that guy. Arrest him right now, goddammit. Throw his fucking ass in a jail cell. No, we're going to have our guys watching him. We're going to make sure we extract the information from him that we want. Because it's, I mean, this is just too, it's too crazy. It's just too crazy. You know? So they've got to get over this libertarianism. We just have to do away with that idea. We have to understand a society. We have to have like a red-pilled understanding of how humanity and our experience here in the world really functions. Because the reality is that you can't have any kind of a society or any kind of a large modern society without having an organizational strategy and having leadership. You got to have it. And the only functional one is nationalism, really, or at least some kind of racially based imperium, some kind of racially based organizing principle. Because races are not all the same. And you can't organize a society to integrate multiple races. It has never worked. There's never been any case in which it has worked. And you also can't mongrelize the races because you just end up with Middle Easterners, basically. And I've already discussed why they are essentially a very low functioning breed. They're a very low functioning breed, whatever you want to call them. So, like, there's just so much that we have to come to grips with.
You know,
we have to come to grips with this. And there's this ancient saying. It's the last thing I feel that I need to say is, there's an ancient saying that the Aryans had is called Timeva Jayate. It means only truth prevails.
Oh, nice. So the ancient Aryans said only truth prevails. I love that. I love that. You've kind of answered a question that's been on my mind. I did some videos on the values of the white race, and I did it like more than a year ago, and the number one at the top that I thought was truth. I thought that describes us the most, that ultimately we hunt for the truth. And so you say that the Aryans had that saying, or our great forefathers. Excellent. Excellent. You see, that's the whole thing. All whites think like that everywhere. We're all the same. We have exactly that outlook. And truth, it always comes back to that thing. And that's where we are the opposite of the Jews. We're the absolute opposite of the Jews. To them, truth has no meaning. They are propagandists and liars, and that's their ball game. And it eventually drives us crazy, which is good. You know, people need to start, you know, people need to leave the system. The system is killing us, and we need to let that system collapse. And later we need to work for its destruction actively, absolutely actively. A quick one on Fauci, a twist on Fauci. I know what you're talking about Fauci, and I totally agree with you. And I'm going to add to it, is that there's a medicine called remdesivir, which Fauci obtained, or he has links to the company that produces it, and ivermectin, which is a cheap medicine that works, and everybody's using it. Even here in South Africa, people are using it on the quiet, and the Indians have been using it, etc. But Fauci uses remdesivir, which he's got links to the company that produces it, and it costs a hellish amount more than ivermectin. And so in your country, they are trying to destroy ivermectin and anything that people believe about ivermectin, whereas ivermectin is a cure and it works very well. And they're giving your people remdesivir, and remdesivir damages your liver and it can kill you. And it's possible that they've even killed, that they've needlessly, maybe even needlessly killed hundreds of thousands of Americans at great cost, you know, while stuffing it all in their pockets. And another thing about Fauci is Fauci got a $1 million prize from Israel. He won a prize in Israel, $1 million. So I mean, the one guy's more corrupt than the next, and I think this will freak people out as time goes by. Uh-huh. As you know, people, I've wondered at what point do whites lose it, and I've noticed that whites generally, they literally need to have the wolf busy trying to kick in their front door. Whites aren't easy to stir up. But the closer and closer it comes to home, the more agitated they get. And I see that COVID, or this whole COVID scam, COVID has made whites crazier than I've seen ever in my lifetime. I've never seen anything like this. And I'm loving it. I'm loving it. Went to the dentist last week for a quick checkup. And all the time I was at the dentist, myself and the dentist and the dental nurse, we spent more time talking than they had to work on my teeth. And all we were talking about was freaking COVID, all the bullshit around it, vaccines. No, and these are people who never get worked up, but I saw them really worked up and I'm loving it. And also the other thing that I've been discussing with people locally here, and we're sharing it now more and more, is how many people we know personally who've taken the vaccine and then died after taking the vaccine. In fact, just today, another friend of mine was telling me about another lady that we both know who took the vaccine a couple of months ago. Now she's in hospital. She's got water on her lungs. She's got heart problems. And that same, and this friend of mine, her brother took the vaccine and he's dead. He's dead now. He died a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, these things, when it starts coming closer to home, it's starting to irritate people. And that's what I like about the craziness. I think the craziness is going to make people more and more angrier, and that's going to be the only way out. Ultimately, anger, and then later when the anger turns into, you know what, we got to do something. What are we going to do? How are we going to get control of our lives again? Who needs to be hanged? Who needs to be destroyed? What power do we need to create? And that's where we need the military people. That's, you know, ultimately, Doom God, you know, here's a nice one about, we'll wind up now, but here's a nice one for you to think about. You've given that wonderful quote from the Aryans. I've got one for you. There was a woman, I'm trying to think of her name. People refer to her as Hitler's priestess, Savitri Devi. So I think it's
Savitri Devi.
Yeah. And I saw Savitri Devi had a
quote.
Yeah,
I'm reading a book of hers called Lightning in the Sun.
Nice. Well, here's a quote from her that I thought was awesome. That's a real wonderful quote about soldiers. I've never heard anybody talk about soldiers in this way. She spoke about the godlike men of action, the godlike men of action. And that's how she spoke about Hitler's troops. And I think that's a point we can end on, that you know, in a society where business and Jews and everybody been breaking down the military, let me tell you, the nation wouldn't exist. The children wouldn't be safe. You wouldn't have a life without crime if it wasn't for the military, the police, etc. And when you take away those foundations from the state, then you'll see what happens. And it amazes me. It astounds me that liberals and Jews have managed to convince white Americans that a country is always safe, that you don't really need all these other things, that these things are just old-fashioned junk that you can get rid of and it won't matter. Well, wait until the real world comes to visit America, as it does with all these people pouring in, etc. And, you know, from what you yourself have seen, that, you know, the rest of the world isn't like America. The rest of the world isn't like Europe. And wait until you see the nightmare that comes when all those European controls are gone. But don't worry, the godlike men of action, the white godlike men of action are still going to come into their own, and they're going to take back everything, my friend. Everything. It is all possible. Just like you say, if you get the right people with the right abilities and the right determination, and they got fire in their minds and souls, and they got a burning will to achieve things, let me tell you, these liberals and libertarians and all other scum, they're going to be running for their lives. That day is coming. The day is coming. There will be hell to pay.
I agree. I actually had a dream or a vision, I think, at one point. It just kind of occurred to me, and I realized, yeah, people are going to go berserk. Just sensed it somehow. I just realized it's coming. It's on the way. There's going to be something that triggers it, or it might just happen to different individuals, but it's going to start. Critical mass, I guess. There's just going to be people going berserk. I mean, I just felt it myself. I felt like there was some kind of spiritual force or some kind of realization that took hold of me, and I understood, yeah, they're going to go berserk. Like, it's going to get to the point where even if they thought they couldn't, or even if they had no will to do it, it's going to be unavoidable. And I think it's probably linked to the survival instinct itself. It's going to be linked to the instinct for self-preservation and for racial preservation that they've tried really hard to convince us doesn't exist. But I think we're going to find that there's just some irrational and completely visceral and organic instinct to take control. And yeah, it's going to happen. And at that point, these ideals that we've been indoctrinated with are no longer going to make any sense. They simply won't have any appeal. They'll make no sense at all. And I think it was like a year or two ago, I guess, once in some video I made, I said, yeah, eventually white men are going to start going berserk. It's not too far away.
Absolutely. You know, you take everything away, and notice how the white male is the main focus of this. So the white male loses his women. He loses his power. He loses to everybody. And when eventually that animal thing kicks in, you know, it's Napoleon said, you cannot start a revolution and you cannot stop a revolution. There's a very complex dynamic. And we in the modern age, we are not immune to it. Don't think that powers in the past also didn't cling to power until the end. But eventually there comes a point where when certain values and things break down, there's a point at which critical mass comes. And whites have been the most controlled people, but whites have also now had a chance to watch the blacks. Blacks can go out of control, do anything they want. You talk about how blacks are in America. Here in South Africa, blacks can strike, burn, complain, moan and bitch all the time, even though they're in total control, and they moan and bitch and they just do as they please. You know, you've seen the Muslims do their own thing, etc. And I always think of George Lincoln Rockwell, the founder of the American Nazi Party. And George Lincoln Rockwell once said, after black revolution comes white revolution. And I think that we've seen black revolution, we've seen Muslim revolution. Hold on, everybody. Hold on. You think whites are immune? Wait until the white revolution gets going. When the white revolution gets going, you're going to see things. I still believe that we are going to show everybody else how you really do it. because when it comes to the real world, when it comes to the real world, that's our place. That's our place. And that's where we need masses of white troops again. We need something like in the time of the Napoleonic Wars, where we've got massed armies of white men, and they go out and they'll go and clean up everything they need to clean up. And even those blacks of yours who are pumped up on steroids, when the white boys come, you'll see, you won't see those blacks for the dust.
So, yeah, no. So. No, he was hesitating even on me. Like, even the first time he saw me, like, he, like, had this shifty and shifty eyes and was trying to hide the first time he saw me when he started working there. And I think it's because, yeah, like, they see a white man who doesn't look like, you know, who doesn't look like shit. If they see a white man who looks like he has even like a slight ability to fight or willingness to fight, they can kind of tell. You're right. They have an instinct for who's strong and who is not. So, yeah, if they see white men who are strong and obviously willing to use violence, I agree with you. They will not be found. They'll be hiding or they'll be begging or something. they won't have the fucking attitude they have now.
Well, you know... Yeah. You know, and I'll tell you from here in Africa, I will tell you that when I was a kid, I saw this, I watched this on the farm, that you know, those blacks, this is all nature. It's all nature and natural. It's like the old wolf, the young wolf. You know, that black, he's deliberately challenging you. And my father and my brother, because they were much older than me, I was very young. And my father and my brother, they'd have to go and grab those blacks and smack them. They'd have to physically grab him and give him a beating. And then, and my brother would refer to it as giving them a hiding. And my brother would say, now that he's given his worker a good hiding, now he's going to be working good for the next week or two until he needs another hiding. and that, I'm afraid, is the way the world really is. And the biggest thing that's killing white men is that we as white men aren't going out and beating the living shit out of others. And when we start doing that and showing our power, like you say, like the first Gulf War, they'll come and surrender to your cell phone. they'll surrender to anything. So yeah, it's been really awesome talking to you, Doom God. And it's been good hearing. I always enjoy soldiers and I love military history because ultimately it's you guys. If you don't go and do that, then there's no place, there's no playground for the little children to grow up and play safely, etc. The white man has to go out there and do the nasty, nasty things. And then the women and the children will be happy and the days will be sunny and they'll be able to play safely and all will be well. But the white male has to go and do nasty, nasty, ugly things. And it's the only way. There is no other way. And you cannot live a life of eternal peace. I think it was Dr. William Pierce. He said, you cannot have eternal peace because you'll have eternal degeneration. Life is struggle and it's the man's job to take care of it. That is our system and it works for us. It's worked for us for tens of thousands of years. So anyway, It's really nice talking to you, and I hope we can talk again at some point in the future. And yeah, these military topics interest me. We didn't even get on to Vietnam and other wars that America has lost, and how that was just also a totally manufactured piece of junk. But I think you've got a good point when you say that, you know what, maybe the failure of Afghanistan was itself just manufactured. That there are things that there are points you make that make sense, because there's no ways in hell that a real America that really knew what it was doing could have lost. But there's also a problem about fighting these funny, weird wars in other places that have got no bearing on your home. You know, there's as a soldier, you'd be motivated if the Chinese were busy invading your territory. You'd be really motivated fighting. Going out there into Afghanistan, sitting and waiting there, I don't think you're that motivated, because you don't see anything that really means anything to you. And sadly, most white soldiers, I think, are lied to, and most white soldiers in the Western world, at least for the last 75 years in almost all countries, have been lied to, and they've literally risked their lives for almost nothing. There's nothing that you risked your life for that helped your family at home or your children or anything, you know. But we'll come right again. We'll be okay. So yeah. Thank you very much for being on
I
my
agree.
show.
It's been my pleasure. I'm glad that I got to talk to you again. It's an honor.
Well, we'll see what we can do in the coming weeks and months.